wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, our first show of 2015. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you.
We are getting straight into it. We are all business this episode because we already fear that we have so much exciting stuff to put into our new show. This is our resolutions review. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, resolutions review. It's our talking about or building off of our New Year's resolutions from 2014. And if we have enough time at the end, maybe we'll talk about resolutions for 2015. Not sure we will.
So for 2014, your resolution was basically to drink more bourbon.
Eat more fajitas was 2013. 2014 was drink more bourbon. Not meaning quantity in the sense of like having 10 of them a night or anything like that, but rather variety, trying it out more often and the like.
You say bourbon, I say bourbon.
Well, you're wrong.
Let's call the whole thing. So your resolution was to drink more bourbon. And we're going to drink on the show.
That's right.
So already some sort of warning.
While you describe what your New Year's resolution was, maybe I'll just start pouring a glass.
Yeah, let's get going. Let's start drinking. Uh-huh. We're going to be drinking bourbon, as I refer to it. And my partner is going to be giving us a little background on why he bought and drank what he drank. And I'm going to slowly get more and more discombobulated because I am not a big spirits drinker.
That's right.
Also through the show this week, we're also going to play some music because my resolution, and I don't do resolutions as I've said many times in the last couple of years, my resolution was to listen to more music, but that meant my partner was going to send me albums that I was to download and then listen to, and I'm now going to report back with my listening experience.
I think originally the plan was one a month. And we didn't quite live up to that.
Yeah, because that's $120. You're joking, aren't you? Well,
and then the show would be really long because we're
Oh, oops, sorry.
Look, you already started music.
I've already started with the music, yeah. So, obviously, because we have a lot going on, I'm going to warn our listeners now, they're going to be moments like that, and they're going to be occasional bumps and donks and
glasses
clinking and the like. So we have our first drink is in front of us.
Yes, it's jump right into it, right?
Yeah,
this is a Buffalo Trace bourbon. All these bourbons are going to be out of Kentucky, maybe one out of Virginia. I would call this a better level regular brand, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Meaning it's not junk. It's not like we're going to talk a little bit about the fancy stuff that people are spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on, but it's good stuff, and it's maybe not as popular as some other good stuff.
If you listen to our burger show, this is not a McDonald's burger, but this is one of the next chain up.
Okay, right. This is very much at the Five Guys level. It's not like a super fancy gourmet, but it's definitely better than your junk. We're not having anything that's like McDonald's here.
This bourbon. Or bourbon. Mm-hmm. And I've now forgotten how I actually say it, because again, I'm not a drinker.
Say it however you'd like.
This isn't a Morton's Steakhouse equivalent. This is good, but this is not.
Oh, you mean of that
all the
level?
Way up. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Morton's I think is overrated, so I'd say it's probably is pretty close to that.
So I can already smell it. Now, I don't drink spirits. What you've poured into glass here.
What am I to do? At least for the moment, we may change paths depending upon how this goes, but we're drinking them neat, which is to say nothing else. It's just a little bit poured in a glass, and we're pouring them very low so that at the end of the day, hopefully we've really only had three drinks over the course of our hour, basically, which may be even too much as it stands. Yeah. But the neat is like that versus on the rocks, which would be ice or with any mixers or things like that. It's going to be strong, but, you know, it's not out of a shot glass. It's in a regular glass.
So, you know, you sniff it, and then you...
You can sip it. I did bring an empty pitcher so that if you decide you don't want to finish it all off, you can dump it into somewhere.
All right.
I've got a little family tree of things. Buffalo Trace is a brand that has a number of different bourbons, but this is their main sort of name one. We're going to actually try two others that are in the same line of bourbons. So,
Hello Kitty.
Yep.
Yeah, I can feel it go down my throat. Again, I don't drink spirits in general. Mm-hmm. I have a Bloody Mary at Easter, and and the occasional, you know, vodka and something, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much it for me. So this is a brand new experience. I'm already feeling vivacious.
It's definitely a wintertime type of thing.
Yes. Yeah. I've noticed that, and it's quite sharp, and it had I could smell it.
Yeah. It's got a vanilla caramel type of, I mean, it's a lot of alcohol smell to it, but when you like, it's just like a wine. It's got these certain notes, woody notes. So, which really gets into what the stuff's made of, which is my next topic. But maybe we want to talk a little bit about the music before I explain how bourbon is made.
All right. So I was given, at the end of the year, five albums to listen to, which was fine because, again, I think everyone knows that I'm, you know, I'm kind of tight-fisted. That's about $52, $58 in current American Apple money.
If you consume your music in that particular fashion, yes.
Yes, I do. I know you probably don't. The first album you gave me, you recommended to me. And again, I'm going to say that because you didn't give it to me. I had to buy it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears. I've just picked out, here's a little...
Called, the album is called Electric Slave.
Electric Slave, and this is the song Come to My Party.
Oh, you like this one? I'm gonna I might give you some other ones to try out too, but so
I'll turn that down and we'll
do you know much about the band? Are you gonna talk about that, or are you gonna just talk about the music? I can give a little background on the band.
No, I'll tell you a little bit about the band from my good friends at Wikipedia.
I will say the one thing about this, like, so it's Black Joe Lewis, Electric Slave. Like, right off the bat, I don't feel 100% comfortable staying all those titles. I can't decide he's affirmatively calling himself Black Joe Lewis, and it's the band, the album Electric Slave. I think I did read that the
I don't think those two things went together, though, did they? Because this wasn't his first album.
No.
He's not making a statement. Yeah.
Third album or something. In fact, the Honey Bears part you mentioned, apparently he never really meant that to be a permanent part of the band's name. He's been trying to push it down. Like, so I think on the most this album, I'm not sure it even mentions that, although on the iTunes version it might.
It didn't say that on the iTunes version. She's from Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, and I'm going to play another. You'll recommend a song to
me. Yeah, I mean, the ones I had on the list were Dar El Salaam or Skull Diggin'.
Skull Diggin', I think, was his big hit. I'll play one or two of those in a moment. Black Joe Lewis is from Austin, Texas, part of that music scene. I know you've attended the Austin City Limits Festival and South by Southwest, and anyone who knows anything about music knows that, you know, Austin is sort of a railway bus depot of culture and influences, mm-hmm. and music. And Black Joe Lewis, in listening to the whole album, that was sort of when I walked away from it, I remember asking you, is this guy blues, is he this, is he rock, but he had rap influence. That there seemed to be, if you listen to the album, and this was one of the albums I liked the most out of the five you recommended for me, it doesn't matter how you identify yourself as a music fan. To me, this was an album where you could safely recommend this to anyone and go, hey, try this. You might like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect people would probably agree with that statement. That's how I felt from listening to it.
I think that's good. What are you going to put on next here?
About what was the one you liked? I liked his song.
Dar El Salaam or Skull Diggin's the big hit, but Dar El Salaam, I think, is maybe...
Turn it up. We're playing Dar Es Salaam.
So, typically, I mean, I think it does have all those influences, but... You know, you'd say it's basically a funk soul blues mixture modernized. You know, this fuzz guitar is a little bit like more of a, it's almost an alternative.
It's got that sort of
alternative funk, alternative soul, alternative blues.
Yeah, but the fact that all those things are together make him in a strange way very accessible.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think so. It has the album has a definite tone to it that sort of rolls through it. You know, in other words, it's not like he's doing one like acoustic song and something else. Everything has a little bit of this bit to it. Not you know, it's not identical by any means, but it's...
He's done three other albums. Black Joe Lewis was his first, released on Shake Yo Ass Records.
Well, yeah, of course.
So, you know, he's hip to things. Tell Him What Your Name Is.
Got horns.
Scandalous. And then this Electric Slave from 2 years ago. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I thought we would hear more of him. But, you know, it's hard to saturate them. It's hard to really rise above the level. There's so many bands out now, and particularly in this sort of smaller alternative. I mean, it's not that it's alternative, but it's, you know, it's not Taylor Swift. You know, it's...
That's an interesting thing. And I'm sure as we go, there's a couple of... In one of the other albums, I'm probably going to say something about the whole notion of alternative music. I don't think there's such a thing as alternative is basically everything now that's not chart.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good point. I mean, that's what part of my stuff about the music is, you know, what are we listening to now? What's actually quote unquote popular? Because in a way, this is popular. I mean, yes. It's popular on iTunes. It's popular on a bunch of things, but it's not popular like a radio hit kind of popular. It's popular in a much lower level.
Let me just get ready on the volume there, because I'm going to play his big hit and then...
I think there's pieces of it that sort of are like... The band that has made a big thing with this sort of sound is the Black Keys.
Yes.
Right, so... And the Black Keys are pretty big now. I mean, like, it started as just a duo, and they're now in, like, they do the Verizon, you know, the big basketball arenas kind of thing, which is really kind of amazing, because it's hard to think of bands like this that are getting past clubs, basically.
Yeah, well, I think this is a reflection of this, the multicultural nature, and I don't mean that, what I mean is the multi-style, multicultural nature of alternative music, in that it has all kinds of different genres and all kinds of different influences. At the end of the day, the hope is that broadens your audience so that you could move beyond the club to playing at the basketball arena.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you appeal to more people, then more people are going to come and see your show.
Yeah, I don't know how many bands in these areas really think they're ever going to play the basketball arenas. You know, that because the bands that you normally see at the arenas, other than, like I mentioned, Black Keys, are Katy Perry and Taylor Swift and, you know, pure pop type of things. And I don't know that anybody can kind of get up to that level with something like that. I mean, I think it's very good. I think people are going to like it. It's interesting that you found it that accessible. I actually would have, not that I was saying it's inaccessible, but I thought of it as a little bit more esoteric or a little bit more unusual that people wouldn't go for.
You know, I agree with that statement to an extent in terms of how it's constructed. And I'm going to think of one of my favorite bands from many, many years ago was Mick Jones's Big Audio Dynamite, which was the band that he formed after the Clash. And he'd been in the Clash, a band identified with sort of the fringes of punk and mod and sort of a rebirth of rock music in the late 70s and early 80s in the United Kingdom. 6 or 7 years later, he is making music using a lot of machines and cuts, and his next band, Big Audio Dynamite, after the Clash, was clearly heavily influenced by, you know, rap music and the funk music of the late 80s and the Beastie Boys, in terms of how he was assembling it, in terms of cuts and samples and that type of things. I identify Mick Jones as one thing from the Clash, and then he becomes almost something else second time around. But what I'm saying was, with his second band, he was clearly trying to draw from whatever was hot around him. So what I'm saying is, in terms of Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears, and the Honey Bears, because that's what it says on his listing on Wikipedia.
Yeah,
he's sampling different things, and he's sort of crisscrossing a little bit. Like the Black Keys, there's some undertone of sort of some harder funk. There's that blues influence still exists. Okay. But I liked it. I did. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, as we were talking about that, I poured our second
more
drink.
More alcohol
here.
Has arrived. Yes.
This is Eagle Rare. Now, so this, let me get a little bit into what bourbon is. So bourbon is whiskey. Whiskey is the broad category of principally brown, but not doesn't have to be, liquors that are fermented off of grains. That, you know, you brew it almost like beer, then you distill it down to a higher alcohol content, but you're starting with grains versus rum, which is starting with molasses, versus tequila, which is starting with ales. I always get a little confused when you mix in vodka there, because most vodkas are based on grains, although some are on potatoes. But the big difference, so you ferment it, you create this alcohol. You ferment it and then you distill it and you create this alcohol. But then what you do with bourbon that makes it unique is that you put it into oak barrels that have been charred inside. Oh, and before I say that, I should say, what are the grains? So to be bourbon legally, people say that it has to come from Bourbon County, Kentucky. Is not true, but to be bourbon legally, it has to be over 51% corn to start with. So this makes it a very distinctively American whiskey, whereas like Scotch
whiskey is
made from barley.
Okay.
And others, I think maybe mixes of other, some rye in there probably, but principally corn, which is of course an American crop originally. And so you start with 51% corn and then you mix in, there's going to be some barley, and it can be much more than that. So a lot of bourbons are more like 80% barley to start with, 80% corn. But then you can mix in barley, You almost always mix in barley, and then the big switch and the big kind of two lines of bourbons are wheated bourbons or rye bourbons. So like rye is also its own whiskey, so rye grains go into some bourbons, wheat grains go into others. And generally speaking, a wheated bourbon is going to be a little smoother, a little sweeter. And it's not sweet because the wheat is sweet, but because the corn will come through more, because wheat is more of a passive tasting grain, whereas rye has more of a peppery taste to it.
Is one cheaper than the other?
No.
So it's not like, oh, well, you know,
for example, the most expensive bourbon out there that everybody talks about is this Pappy Van Winkle's that it's like near impossible to get at this point, you know, to get their 23-year-old version, which, by the way, so that's the big thing that differentiates expense is how long did it spend in the barrels. So once they ferment the stuff and distill it, they put it in, it's clear, they put it in these oak barrels that they have burned the inside of. So it's like charred oak. You put it in there, basically you put it in there for a minimum of 2 years, but most of your mainline bourbons are going to be about 4 years. This one we're having now is 10 years. So, in fact, the recipe for this, like meaning the stuff that goes into the original liquor that we're having here, is the exact same as the last one we had, Buffalo Trace. They use the same what they call mash bill, which is basically the recipe, the mixture of what grains. This has been in barrels for 10 years. The other stuff had been in barrels for like 4 or 5 years.
So this is my question then. I mainly drink beer. I do drink some wine. I know a little bit about wine. Cut a long story short. Everything about wine ultimately is its vintage, which is the year of the grape. For bourbon, in terms of what you've just said, it's how long it's been in the barrel. Right. Not that it's a 1929, no, although if it's a 1929. Really, but that's what I mean. The year doesn't matter, but the fact that it's been, to take 1929, it's been in a barrel for 90 years.
That's true.
That would make it more expensive, more – I mean, what is it?
Yeah, I mean, at some point you would lose it. Like the oldest I've seen is like 20-year, a 20-year type of thing, or 23-year on the Pappy Van Winkles.
And this one smells different.
Yeah, I mean, it's mellower and smoother than the last one.
It smells a bit like Christmas cake. Mainly because I identify Christmas cake with England and being just loaded full of alcohol.
There you go.
Hence it can survive.
The taste will start to break down a little bit after this, but you know, as you have more of them, you start losing track of all that. But so this is Eagle Rare. It's from the same same distillery, Buffalo Trace, all of which is owned by Sazerac, which is maybe people have heard of Sazerac. It's actually a liquor was called Sazerac that was based at, and a drink. There's a drink called an old from New Orleans.
It definitely tastes different.
Where it started,
than the last one. Mm-hmm. We're in something now where my partner and I are sort of vaguely trying to describe very subjective sort of criteria that only we are experiencing right now rather than your listener. What is it? But I'm going to throw it to you as the expert, or more expert than me.
Yeah, I'm not an expert. What
are these differences? Is it process that I'm tasting? Is it ingredients? What is it that makes them taste different?
Well, this one is going to be mostly, as between these two, it's mostly going to be time in barrel. But like these other ones we have, it's the mix you started with. Like, so I said, these rye ones, which we're going to have some later on, are going to have more bite to them and more peppery spiciness to them. This is going to be a little bit smoother.
Yeah, that's true.
And then those. And then it's the time in the barrel, which is going to cause it to mellow and change. Just like, you know, red wines over time, they talk about the tannins, you know, in a red wine.
Yeah.
Is that sort of, it's got a dryness to it. It kind of dries out your mouth kind of feel. Well, those change over time because the chemistry of the something just changes very slowly. You pick it up from the barrels, it goes away, it settles down. Like at some point, it starts to get worse. You know, even old wines, most of them will eventually start getting worse. But so that's it. We should move on because we're already pressing on time. And our next band is Ha Ha Tonka.
Ha Ha Tonka.
Mm-hmm.
This is the opening song from their album Lessons. This is Dead to the World.
Mm-hmm.
Going to talk a little bit before they sing. They're from West Plains, Missouri.
Yep.
Been around for nearly a decade.
Yeah, this is, again, I think their fourth album.
Third. No, fourth.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't. Yeah, I might have cut short printing up that page.
Ha Ha Tonka. Well, I don't want to. You go ahead.
No, keep talking.
Well, no, I want to talk about your... Like, see, I was recommending these discs, and I had a big... recommending these albums, and the big problem I had was do I recommend things that I know fit Zeph's taste, or do I recommend things that are I think are good and just to see what he does with them? This would fall into the latter category.
This actually wasn't the song that I was going to talk about directly as an example, but I want you to listen. Just listen to the guy's voice for about 5 seconds.
Yeah, I've heard it a lot. I'm listening.
All right, so I'm going to turn him down, and that's the lead singer's name is that Brett Anderson?
I think.
Brian, I think so.
Not that important.
My dear old mother, bless her, is here visiting me at the moment. We are in my car, and I turn on my iPod because I say, look, we're going to have to listen to some music because I need to just do my refresher for the podcast that I'm on. I play this, without saying who it is, we're driving along, and my mother says to me, ooh, is this Paul Simon? And I say, no. But it sucks like Paul Simon.
Oh, my God.
At that moment, my mother says to me, oh, Zeph, because to her, using a word like sucks, if you're older, if you say something sucks, you're basically dropping some form of heavy-duty profanity. Obviously, like that, people are like, oh, as we throw words like sucks around and putting the boot in and this gags, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Once my mother's gone beyond reprimanding about my language, she said it sounded like Paul Simon. And that's kind of the reason I found it kind of interesting, because when I first listened to this album, yeah, vocally the guy sounds a little bit by Paul Simon, but to me it reflected a style of music I don't like very much, sort of heavily influenced by slightly esoteric things. I didn't like it very much.
It's roots rock. It is American roots rock, so maybe that's why it doesn't resonate with you.
What does roots rock mean?
Meaning it's almost a country, but not really country, Americana-type instrumentation, acoustic guitars. There's a mandolin in there. There may be, I don't think they use a banjo, but, they'll have some instrumentation like that. And it's rock. I mean, there's no electronics layered on top of this stuff. There's no keyboards being played. Maybe some piano, but there's no, keyboards on top of it. This is, I will tell you right now, one of the best bands one of my favorite bands, I should say.
Really?
We went up to New York City to see them in a small club.
This is the same person who goes to see Rush and Iron Maiden.
Sure.
Okay.
But we went to see them in a small club where, it held 200 people or something like that. I saw them originally at Austin City Limits Festival also. We've seen them 4 or 5 times since at various small venues and the like, and they're awesome.
Okay.
Why don't you throw on while we're talking about it? Why don't you put on The Past Has Arms?
Let me find that.
I will say this is not my favorite album by them. The prior albums I think are better, but we were trying to give you new albums.
Mouth full of blood when I bit my tongue. I caught myself feeling and pulled and again.
I mean, these people, this is
actually one of the songs that I did like.
Oh, is that right? There
but
you go.
The first three or four on the album, again and again, I kind of felt it was sort of...
This doesn't sound like Paul Simon, by the way.
No, it didn't.
He has a much smoother voice. There's grit in this voice.
A little bit. Because I can feel it hold me
tight. Every time I close my... You know what would be interesting? I don't know if anybody will write in, because they never do.
No.
But we are going to play enough of these songs that you'll get to hear a bit of it. I will be interested in seeing what people say they like.
Yeah.
We're showing you tiny samples. Maybe you go listen to it somewhere else. You can get it from Spotify for free.
Oh, really?
If you have a Spotify account.
Yeah, so
that's why I sort of said that. I don't buy whole albums. I pay a couple bucks a month to Spotify so I can listen to whatever I want to anytime I want to.
You don't buy whole albums?
This was interesting. Because I don't buy albums anymore. I just listen to them.
And neither do I.
But I do listen to whole albums.
Well, this was the interesting thing. And I want to digress for a moment before we move on to more drink and more albums. I don't listen to albums anymore. And I think a lot of that is to do with the technology. The shuffle button, the ability to make a playlist has changed how I consume music. Now, before you go on, Yes, I always made mixtapes. But if you're going to sit there with a cassette player and an LP and attempt to make a mixtape...
Yeah, well, it takes less effort now. You had to make a mixtape before or play DJ and like switch things in and out. Now you can press some buttons. Because to correct myself, I consume whole albums. I have a whole album on my device or whatever I've got. But I do tend to listen to them in a mixture, right? But I'll listen to any song on the album. I'm not like just buying a hit and putting the whole thing on. Like I'll buy the whole.
I did. And again, I think this was part of it with Ha Ha Tonka. I didn't like the first couple of songs. And... unlike in the old days, if you had a record player, it was kind of a hassle to reach
you stay.
You listen to it because it's a lot easier than damaging your record. I never got that often to songs like The Past Had Arms. Ha Ha Tonka. No, I'm not laughing.
Yeah, it's fine. Because like I said, I was trying to challenge you a little bit to see. I didn't expect you to like it. I know it. These other bands like the Electric Slave, I thought you would like it. But there's other bands on here that I was like, oh, he'll totally love this. It sounds like English 80s stuff, you know.
Well, Ha Ha Tonka?
No, other ones I recommend.
Okay, so Eric's going to reach for more alcohol.
Yeah,
I'm going to be in the tradition of all our shows. I'm eating because I always eat when we do these beer shows.
I'm going to suggest that you don't eat that.
I've just opened a bag of cheddar and sour cream.
First of all, please. Do you realize how loud that's going to be in a microphone?
I'm not going to eat on the air. I'm going to turn away from
the... No, it doesn't work that way. These microphones pick up everything. Listen.
I was just doing that so that the listener knows that this isn't shtick. This is legit. And the reason I'm going to eat...
it's all shtick.
The reason I'm going to eat a cheddar and sour cream chips between each drink now is we now have a consistency of like a, you know, we're all starting in the same place. You have to cleanse your palate.
Well, so now cheddar chips are not going to help you.
Yeah, but every whiskey
you
now
have some water.
Every bourbon now starts with cheddar and sour cream chips.
No, boy, that's such a mistake. I mean, this is not right. I'm going to get upset. All right, so
these are good chips.
Oh my god, we're going to have a discussion after this podcast.
You've poured another drink.
Yeah, Knob Creek. Knob Creek is. Knob Creek is made by
very accessible brand.
Jim Beam.
Okay. All right, there you go.
So Jim Beam obviously is a very popular bourbon, maybe the most popular in terms of its Jim Beam, what they call white label, which is their regular.
And to be fair about my palate, I'm chasing my chips with Coca-Cola Zero. And you do drink Coca-Cola with bourbon. So there you go, you see.
So this Knob Creek I would call it the top of the line for Jim Beam products. It is the same recipe as Jim Beam, but it is 9 years old versus regular Jim Beam, which is about 4 or 5 years old.
Smells sweet. That's the first note I got off it.
This one is actually 13% rye, so there should be a little bit more bite and pepper to it, but Jim Beam to start with is probably pretty sweet. So, yeah, it doesn't have as much smell as the last couple did.
Maybe, well, it can't be the cheddar and sour cream chip.
It would have no influence on your palate.
Yeah, but not on my smell.
We probably shouldn't have both sipped at the same time. But that's definitely different. It's got...
You know something? All jokes aside, and maybe it is the Ruffles, that's quite good.
Yeah. Well, this is, like I said, it's there.
And what I mean by that is, I know that sounds a very facile way to describe, that's quite good. No, as someone who doesn't drink bourbon, if you gave me a glass of that, I wouldn't go, oh, great, look, he's giving me bourbon. I would go, yeah, that's quite nice. Is it fair to say that this is a more, this is obviously Jim Beam's top end brand?
Right? Yeah, well, so one of the things about the business is, Jim Beam started coming out what they called these small batch bourbons a few years ago. Knob Creek, Booker's, Baker's, Basil Hayden's are all – it's and interesting. You'll see them on a shelf. They don't say they're Jim Beam products, but they're all Jim Beam products. Similar sort of different mixes of things, but similar recipes. But Knob Creek would be the longest aged of this set. So in that sense, it's probably the fanciest. You'll notice so this is a 100 proof bourbon, which is a little higher than a lot of bourbons will be, more like 90 or 80 proof.
And okay.
Proof, by the way, is it's a measure of the amount of alcohol. The number is basically twice as much as the percentage of alcohol. So like a 100 proof bourbon is 50% alcohol.
Okay.
Right. You generally.
Because if anything was 100 proof, it would kill you.
Yeah. There are like there are liquors that are over 100 proof, but it's not that often. So like a 151 rum is 151 proof, and that's the stuff you can basically light on fire, basically, you know.
Okay.
But so this is a little higher alcohol. That might be where, like, maybe you like it better with a little higher alcohol. People sometimes like that. Sometimes you might throw a little water in it to kind of cut back the alcohol presence.
I'm not going to lie to you. I liked it because, yeah, it was a little peppery. It was sharper, yet at the same time, I found it very...
Not difficult to handle.
No, exactly. Like, you know. No, and it was nice, and it had a bit of a profile where, like I say, this is out of the first three, this one distinctly tastes different to me.
So he's got we have a favorite so far.
Yeah, so the most expensive one.
Yeah, how about music now?
Okay, I am playing The Joy Formidable.
Mm-hmm. What song did you pick to start with?
Just the very first one from their album Wolf's Law. This Ladder Is Ours.
This Ladder Is Ours, okay.
Joy Formidable, a Welsh alternative rock band. Mm-hmm. I'd heard of them, but I'd not heard them.
Yeah. I think this is third album. No, second big album. There might be a little small album that they did it.
They've done some EPs. They've done a whole host of singles.
Did you see what they were doing this year? They were doing all Welsh language music.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And I could not find it anywhere, like, to listen to figure it out. But it was like they were releasing it releasing something each month that was in Welsh.
I actually heard one of the guys, I don't know which one, on the radio, on American radio, discussing exactly what you just said there. Mm-hmm. Now that you've said it, I just didn't put two and two together until right now.
So I really like Joy Formidable. It's funny. It was one of those things that I liked a little to start, and then I listened to it more, and I actually like it more the more I listen to it. It's one of my favorites for, like, listening to when I'm mowing the lawn. It just it rolls. It's got a female singer. I forget her name. It's some sort of funny name.
Rhiannon.
No. Ritzy Bryan.
Yeah, Rhiannon Ritzy Bryan.
Oh, really?
She says Ritzy when she's picking up a dry cleaning, but when she's going to get her eyes tested, she has to write Rhiannon on the form.
Okay.
I mean, that's the bottom line here.
And it's, like, I think it's got a, it reminds me of Smashing Pumpkins, but faster.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, it's real dense guitar fuzz to it. They throw on... Throw either the Mau Mau song or Choya.
All right, I'm getting ready. Going to the Mau Mau song. They list themselves as alternative rock, dream pop, shoegazing, indie rock, and post-punk.
I buy that. This one has a long, low lead in before it gets cranked. We should talk over this we're doing a DJ thing
this
here.
This is just shoegazing, this part of it.
Oh, it's, I guess it's not that long of a lead in as I thought. Maybe it bounces back and forth.
I'm not going to lie. I went in and out on this album. When I first heard it, I liked it. Then I listened to it again and I didn't like it as much. Then I didn't listen to it for 2 months and I listened to it again and I liked it more. Uh-huh. I've been listening to it a lot the last 2 weeks. It's a long album, 12 songs, nearly an hour. So, I mean, that's a lot. I always think of albums as being somewhere between 35 and 40 minutes back in the day. Huh. Albums have got longer because they no longer have to fit onto things.
It's an LP.
So it's a long album. You know what I find? I like it in two or three song hits. They're a perfect EP band to me.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the whole album, I did feel after a while that I was hearing variants of the same song. And when I listen all the way through... That's
I would say the last three or four songs don't ring as much for me. Like that. And so I do when I think of the album, I forget the last three songs. And maybe it's because it's such a long album and it doesn't take me that long to mow my lawn.
Okay.
I finished before.
The weakest track to me is actually the title track, Wolf's Law, which they have put right at the end of the album.
Okay.
Yeah. And to me, that was the weakest track. And it's interesting that you say that, because if you take away three tracks from 53 minutes... You're left with a 38-minute album.
Yeah, there you go.
So
maybe they should think about that.
Didn't like... No, I'm sorry. I did like them, but I liked them in portions.
Small
Knob
Bites.
Creek, yeah.
So that actually raises an interesting point, which I was going to talk about, and now seems like a good opportunity.
I finished mine.
Oh, good. You liked it.
Yeah, I liked that.
Well, I might as well finish mine then, too.
Yeah.
Which is, You know, the way that the music, you talked about the way the music is, you're consuming the music and singles and things like that. But
yeah,
I'm thinking more about the way a pop band makes an impression now. And I think one of the things that these bands have in common, and it's not why I picked them, but I think it's why they sort of surfaced as decent bands, is or popular bands at that level, is they have a thing. I don't want to use the word gimmick, because it's not a gimmick, but they have a particular tone and sound that you go, ooh, I haven't heard exactly that before. But what you said there about the songs being the same, the trick is they then play that theme. They're almost more homogenized. Like, it's not like a – think about old U2 albums where it would like vault from different types of song to different type of song.
Song and
like you'd have a quiet type thing, of song, like a different thing.
Tempo, yes.
These guys go, here's our thing. We are going to – like this one was going to be, I am fast and fuzzy and I got to – girl singer and
we're giving it to
like,
you for now.
Yeah, giving to and like
cut your grass to this. Boom, boom,
exactly, and it works that way. Same thing with the Electric Slave thing. It has a motif to it. Ha Ha Tonka is a little different because it's more like a traditional structure and it's not like a pop alternative the way these things are. But the trick is the thing is
that's why they're an EP band.
I don't think any of these bands. Well, I don't. Yeah, that's three or four
songs.
These bands,
and I can consume it.
These
in
bands
one go.
Tend to go away. I get disappointed because I hear this stuff. And I'm not talking about these bands because they were just recent, but like a couple of years ago, you'd hear a band and you go, ooh, that sounds really interesting. I'd listen to an album. And then it never goes anywhere. Like the next album is just slight variations on the same thing. Nobody's reinventing themselves. Nobody's sort of growing, it doesn't seem to me. We're going to have an exception later on where I think there's potential for that. But they seem to like the only way they can break through to get attention is by having that different sound, but then they play it over and over again. You know, I think like years and years ago, the example I think about is that Evanescence had that song that was sort of like a rap thing. Like I forget who they did it with, the guy from Smash Mouth or something like that. Whatever it was,
yes.
it had this boom, and those were like two songs on that album. Well, they did so well on that song, like the rest of the next time they did an album, it was just that. You know, it was just then over and over again. And I was like, fine. That's good. I'm going to have it on my rotation, but I'm not going to follow you like a band. I'm not going to end up owning 10 of your albums because I don't need 10 albums of this.
Well, this is an interesting thing, though. And I do think music now, like anything, is a much more crowded marketplace if you're in the business. In the same way that nearly any two fellas can sit in a basement and make a podcast,
right.
It's so much easier. Not easier, because I know it's tough if you're out there as a musician creating and attempting to break through. But ultimately, the technology, just the way the world is, if you're really committed, you can get an album out there. I agree with you to an extent that bands now tend to do their thing. And I think what happens is bands now have two choices. They do their thing and they realize that they're going to have a limited shelf life. Or they go away for 2 years and reinvent themselves and come back.
Well, who's done that, though?
But what I'm saying is 20 years ago, bands could attain a certain status, U2, but I'm thinking of bands like REM and these kind of guys who, because just the way we consume music was different, we only got it from MTV and from the radio, they could evolve creatively at a much slower tempo. You could do
yeah,
what I'm saying
sure.
is if you're the Joy Formidable, you have to come hard with your thing,
yeah,
release
no
three albums in 4 years,
you know,
and you're in and out.
You know what it's
if
like?
If you're REM, you can release four albums that are all very clearly identical REM, but you can take 9 years to do it.
Yeah, well, in part because you weren't pushed up to the surface so
yeah.
quickly. Like you were just touring colleges. Well, as long as you're just touring colleges, you weren't expecting to be everywhere.
Exactly.
Whereas all these bands expect to immediately be everywhere, and so now and maybe. Maybe it's themselves, maybe it's the producers, whoever it is. You know, think about it. It's like TV shows. You know, they always talk about series. You never know if your series is going to stick. And so, therefore, you put all your good stuff in fast, and then you go, what the heck do I do next? Like, because you don't know. Like, I might get canceled after a season. I don't want to leave any jokes on the table, so to speak, if you're a comedy. Or I don't leave any stories on the table.
Yeah, I just think, you know, in the same way that we listen to music differently, music is now presented to us differently, and I don't mean that in terms of the actual technology, although that's got something to do with it, but in terms of how bands front themselves up. And like you say, you said to me, oh, have they done 2, 3, or 4 albums? No, they've done, the Joyful Middle have done 2 albums, you know, and they've released like 5
EPs.
That's
a good point, because I will say, like, even though I'm sort of talking about these like they're flash band, almost every band that we're talking about has 3 or 4 albums. Like, none of them are, this is their first album. I don't think any of these were, it's their first album. So they, somebody's been listening to them for a couple of albums already, enough that they could, you know, afford to buy and make a new album, or, you know, people would be willing to invest money. So it is kind of, maybe that's an unfair characterization of them as sort of.
But they're not one-hit wonders.
No, they're not one-hit wonders, but it's but almost like one album wonders.
You know? No, they are one-star wonders, because like we say, no one.
Plus they're not hits.
Not everyone goes away and reinvents themselves now. Some people do.
I also think the other thing is a lot of bands.
Mick Jones from The Clash went away and to an extent reinvented himself.
A lot of other thing about bands is they're better. Like they are objectively better than fledgling bands were in the past. Just think of like just in our lifetime when you'd see a band when you were 20 years old, how bad some of them were, and yet they were making a living because, I don't know, maybe everybody was drunk in the audience like that.
Because it is easier to produce good music at a technical level. So everyone is more polished. Everyone, it hangs together. The quality of mixing has helped a lot of people sound better than they are. All those things are part of it. All right, we've got more alcohol in front of us.
So I poured a Woodford Reserve, which is Woodford. Now we're in the Brown-Forman family, which people won't know what it is, but it's Jack Daniel's manufacturer. Jack Daniel's, by the way, although very similar to a bourbon, is not a bourbon. It's a Tennessee whiskey, and the way that's manufactured is different.
It is surprisingly odorless.
Yeah,
it's not completely odorless.
To me, it's got a more of a pronounced alcohol thing. I mean, we may be the
don't smell like the others.
No, one of the problems we may have is the first one you smells a lot like this, and then they tend to smell less. Your olfactory senses tend to dull by exposure.
See, it's not the ruffles that are dull in my olfactory senses. You were worried that I'd be eating potato chips in between swigs, but it's not that.
So Woodford is a slightly higher rye content on it. One of the things I was going to talk about with this stuff is that I tend to bourbon has now ascended and is a little bit like craft beers in its popularity.
Do you want a chip?
I really just hit the mute button on your microphone.
Keep
or something
joking.
Like that. It's got a popularity kind of like craft breweries, but everybody should know, like, even though they have these craft distillery, like, small batch stuff, these are big companies. Like, all of the bourbons that we're having are from major international companies. For example, Jim Beam was just acquired last year by Suntory, which is best known for, I don't know if
you... Lost in Translation.
Man, Lost in Translation, yes, where Bill Murray was... pretending to advertise Suntory, was an Asian liquor, I should say, or whiskey, actually.
On that point, can I interrupt you and ask you a question? Do any of these companies make other alcoholic products?
Oh, yes. They almost all do. All the ones we're talking about.
And what
about.
I mean now, is, I'm talking about they also do a line of vodka and a line.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They almost all of them do. What I was going to say is there are craft whiskey places. They're starting to emerge. The trick is, right, you can make craft beer in a month, right? You just brew it and you put it out. You can't make craft liquor very easily because it takes you 5 years in a barrel. I mean, that's not something that you just set up in your backyard and you just kind of do it there. So a lot of these places, when they start, will actually buy the fermented stuff from other people and make new blends out of it and be like, oh, that's our thing, and eventually we're going to start making our own. But it's a very different kind of business model, even though it has a similar aficionado base. They're not the same folks, but they kind of overlap that way. I skipped over one to note, as Maker's Mark was like the first. So Maker's Mark is like Sam Adams, in that before the stuff became a craze, Maker's Mark made itself known in the, I think it was the mid 80s, where it started advertising. It actually did a bunch of advertising, I think, in the Wall Street Journal in order to pitch itself to the rich, you know, the Wall Street folks about, you know, this isn't some junk bourbon, it's something special. And it now occupies a similar space in the consciousness of the cognoscenti. Is that how you pronounce that word?
Yes.
Of bourbon aficionados, in that they all seem to hate Maker's Mark. Like, Maker's Mark is somehow like a pretender, and it's junk. And you really, if you're into Maker's Mark, you're a dilettante or an amateur. You don't know what you're after. And in the same way that Sam Adams, despite the fact it pioneered stuff,
everyone thinks it's a bit of a joke.
They have that advertising campaign, which the truth is, Sam Adams not. Certainly no, not bad.
But if you say it's your favorite,
it's all been done, you know, and we want to have our like double imperial IPA, and we don't care about Sam Adams Boston Lager.
So I'm going to ask you a question about that, and anyone, you can go back and listen to our craft beer show from a couple of years ago.
Let me just finish out a Maker's Mark point, but see if you can remember it for the next 2 seconds. But so Maker's Mark came out with a thing called Maker's Mark 46, and you'll see it's over my shoulder, but we're going to skip it because we're not going to have enough time to cover it.
Okay.
So what this is it's regular Maker's Mark, but what they did is they put in extra burnt wood. Basically, they basically, instead of just putting in a barrel, they basically racked up these like bars of wood basically that had been burned, and they're trying to accelerate the process of making it it's like it's been in a barrel longer, but really we did it faster. We don't have to do it as expensive. So it's kind of funny. They also had a big scandal a couple years ago where they said they were going to water down the proof because they didn't have enough, and everybody kind of gave them a hard time.
So I have two questions then. And you just talk about Maker's Mark there burning the barrel and bunging it in there.
Because barrels have bung holes, so that's where the phrase comes from.
Are these things really make a difference, or is this a bit like Budweiser bringing out a beer and going, it's got a born on date? Remember for a while that was the craze, and so don't drink funky beer. You can do. You know what I'm saying? Well, sometimes
which
things
has
are
a great truth in that, when you buy a craft beer, you do want fresh beer. It will get worse over time. Okay. Beer is not designed to be aged, but Budweiser was playing it up. I mean, I will say the Maker's Mark 46 tastes different, and I would say better than regular Maker's Mark, but it's not interesting enough to merit us stopping there on this tour.
So are there people out there?
Although we may come back, because actually we're getting through.
Well, what's the correct term for bourbon? Do you distill it? You don't brew it.
Well, you brew it first, but then you distill it.
But what's the one where you say, I brew beer?
Is not the right. I guess you ferment it. Right, so you're using yeast to convert sugar to alcohol, then you distill it.
Is there anyone out there fermenting who have carved out a niche in the market, and they truly are a craft beer operation rather than someone who's been bought up by a multinational and ultimately
in terms of the whiskeys?
They've only got one outlet in such and such, and all the beer comes from there.
In fact, the book, so we have a chart in front of us that is basically a map of the different distilleries out of Kentucky, and it's a book called An Urban Guide to Moonshine. I can't remember now, but whatever it is, the guy who wrote the book opened a distillery in Brooklyn on the site, basically, of the oldest. It's Kings County Distillery, because that was the old name for Brooklyn. But they're making bourbons. And that's why I was going to say that is the next wave. I mean, there is now enough attention on this stuff that we all got attention from the Sam Adams of the world with these side of whiskeys, and they're making and some of these, I guess you could equate with old European beers.
They're great beers.
Yeah. But there are now people who are making smaller stuff, and there's a Mount Vernon here, meaning Mount Vernon where George Washington's
house. Yeah,
they make whiskey there now. They make like a small amount each. I mean, obviously it's not a big commercial operation because it's a nonprofit, but that stuff gets bought up like 15 minutes after it goes on the market each year.
Because I'm of the opinion, and I underline that very poor. Normally, my opinions masquerade as fact. I'm going to admit that this is an opinion. I'm of the opinion that more and more craft breweries, in terms of beer, arrive, and then at some level they are someone else is their parent company. And I'm now because I know that's not entirely true.
It's not.
But I do feel that beer is much further down the line where the big boys are mixing in with the little guys, and they have their arms of their operation acting like they're little boys because it's a marketing thing.
If you're not paying any attention, sure. Yeah. Okay. You know, your Shock Top and your Killians and things like that might seem like they're all big companies kind of thing.
Okay.
But there are so many craft beers. I mean, like, listen, our friend or the beer monger, I went over there to get some beer, and there must have been 8 different types of Virginia-based small breweries, like just Virginia ones. Like it's so overwhelming now with the different choices, but enough about that. How about some music again?
Let's go. Yeah, this is
a different one.
My favorite album.
Is that right?
Yeah, turn this up. This is The Day Doc Went Hunting Heads.
Well, you haven't said who it is.
I'm going to when there's a moment. It's from the album Third by The Baseball Project.
Yep. So,
and I'm going to talk about this in a moment. I just want to let it play so people can
it's funny that
get
you
a feeling.
This
just,
song.
Just listen.
Now, some of the baseball people will know this story, but.
All right, so turn that down, and I'm now going to immediately go to another song.
Okay. Are you going to do 13 among these?
No, but I'm, okay. You know something? I was going to play something else, but let's play 13 because you like it.
Well, not because I like it, but because it's a story that people will know. Actually, I do like it, but that's not why I was picking it.
Now, this is basically a supergroup.
Yeah.
It's a new school supergroup. It's a guy from R.E.M.
Two guys from R.E.M. There was one guy, Peter Buck, originally from R.E.M., and then Mike Mills also joined. So,
all right.
This is Alex Rock Rodriguez, by the way. This is a story called 13. It's about him coming to the Yankees and Babe had number 3, so he had to switch number 13.
The album, they're called The Baseball Project. The album is 3. All the songs, third. All the songs are about baseball. Now, I'm going to digress for about 60 seconds here, as I always say. I'm one of those people who, when I listen to songs, the first thing that gets me is the melody and how it sounds. Now, the more I like bands, the more I listen to the words. But my very first judgment when I hear something is, does it appeal to me in a melodic sense? The guitars, the drums, the tone and tenor of the vocalist. Obviously, again, the more I like bands, the more I listen to what they've written down, what they are saying. I don't want to sit here. For example, again, let's talk about The Clash that I talked about earlier. You know, they have different songs about different things. The albums London Calling, songs like Sandinista, the albums all are about things. I did find it slightly random. This whole album, every song was about baseball. And I just found...
Realize, not only this album, this is the third album that is all about baseball.
Yeah, and
the first two albums are also all about baseball.
And I just found that really, really weird and almost kind of like infantile. It just sounded weird. Like that's the sort of thing a little kid would do, would just make up songs about baseball. Yet, when I listened to it melodically...
Yeah,
I loved it. This was my favorite album. I just loved the way it sounded. Very, very American compared to what I was weaned on. But I liked it. No surprise. One guy from R.E.M. So you can't.
Do you remember where the other people are from? I forget.
The Hindu Love Gods -5 and Tuatara, whoever they are. But I just found it very strange.
Well, listen,
I just found it weird. I love the album.
Okay. It's interesting in that basically it's some rich musicians who said, let's challenge ourselves. You know, this will be fun. It's sort of a novelty. It's not a novelty exactly, but it's a challenge. I will compare it to a sonnet. When you write a sonnet, you have a specific structure in a poem, and you have to do it in a certain pattern, and you have to have the rhymes all hash out a particular way. So it becomes a challenge for you to tell whatever story you want to tell within the structure.
Sure.
So these guys did a similar something where they said, we want to write rock songs, but it has to be about baseball. And so you have to challenge each time. What's the song?
This is Box Scores.
Forget about myself.
Yeah. So they challenge themselves. I gotta say, the lyrics are horrible.
Yeah. I mean, my easy answer is yes. But I don't know, they just seem to get away with it.
Yes. I will also say, I don't really like the music. Like, it's funny, I recommend this. I had looked this in the paper, and I said, well, this would be different. Like, different than just doing what's the reason. Some old guys putting together this band, and it got a nice review in the paper, and I was like, oh, let's see what he likes. I'm really interested that you really like it.
I listened to this more than to any honest, of the others.
That's funny, because I barely listened to it after I sent it to you, and I listened to it in the last week. The thing about it, I want to make a point. The thing I don't like is, you hear this rhythm, they're all just like that. It reminds me of the Traveling Wilburys. I get the fact that the Traveling Wilburys were sort of like, oh, these are interesting songs, but at some level you'd start to listen and you go, they're just... It's like they're all hanging out and playing, you know, and it's this. Nobody's really challenging themselves in the terms of the song being something unusual. And it does at times sound very R.E.M.-ish.
And no one actually goes away and writes lyrics. They're just going, yeah, we'll just make up some songs about baseball. It was all very low. It's interesting.
Where is it?
Well, They Are the Oakland A's. That was another song that I liked.
Pasquale.
Isn't it Pasquale?
On the perimeter, Pasquale.
All right, here we go.
Which is about a Braves player from the early 80s, Pasquale Perez. Well, it's not really about him. It's some story. But this one sounded to me a little different, and it was probably the most interesting song for me. I mean, it definitely sounds like 1988
R.E.M. Yeah, I liked it. That's why I liked it.
Yeah. What? In the days before GPS. Is this singer from The Waitresses?
I don't know.
You know that Christmas song, Christmas Wrapping? Isn't this sound just like the Christmas Wrapping singer?
I think her name is Linda Pittman, and I will attempt to search while we play.
I mean, she almost sings in the pattern of Christmas Wrapping. Went down to the, you know, by the smallest turkey. Blah, 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 blah. Her Twitter feed's probably not going
to
show.
She's married to a Yankee fan.
Oh, it's a problem. All right, well, we don't want to bog down this, but it sounds to me very much like that. And I thought that was a pretty good song.
Can I name drop for a moment? Because then I can tweet it. But it does come back to my original point. My mother, dear old mother, who's here at the moment, she's good friends with Sir Tim Rice, who was Andrew Lloyd Webber's, at one time, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, The Lion King. Those songs, he wrote the words. Because I've met him, and those songs, those productions like Joseph's Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat are part of my personal life. When I listen to any of those things, I never think of Andrew Lloyd Webber. I think of, Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Yeah, that's my mom's friend, Tim Rice, who wrote that.
Yeah.
And this comes back to my point, though, about the relationship between lyrics and song. And again, for everything else, I don't really listen to the lyrics until I've come to like something. I just liked the way it sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I wonder if it's helpful for you that you don't have the baseball background to make it seem like it's...
But there is a part of me who still thinks, I liked it, but I'm kind of semi-embarrassed about liking it. It's a bit like saying, I really like Sam Adams. Do you know what I mean? Well, because every song's about baseball, and I just found
And then the fact, it is a little dad rock, you know?
But we are men of indeterminate middle age.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's not that it's wrong. I tend to skew a little younger in my musical taste than my actual age, so maybe that's why I'm a little bit...
So I don't know.
Can you imagine putting this music in front of a teen?
Yeah.
They would be like, what? What are you doing?
But that's the thing. I have a big blank spot in my music collection. It's called like 1995 to 2005. There's only odd songs that survive.
Yeah.
But because, you know, these guys have their heritage in 1980s R.E.M., I'm still on board with it. So anyway.
That's interesting. Have you gotten the other albums?
No.
Well, you must not like them that much then.
Because I'm a minge bag and I'm not dropping. I've already dropped $50, $60 on this resolution thing for last year. I'm not going into the new year just spending money on a whim.
All right. I think it's safe to say we're going to bust our time, but I'm happy with it.
No, we normally go to an hour and 15.
Yeah. We're going to go past that, I think.
No.
All right. We have another drink in front of us.
Okay.
Let's come back to that. This is Four Roses. Actually, it's four. There's a bunch of different Four Roses. This is Four Roses single barrel, so it's their best episode of their Four Roses. Four Roses is actually owned by Kirin. We just talked about Suntory getting involved in the business. Kirin is
who make the beer.
Yeah, Kirin beer, and they make,
and I guess they make, do they make
like
the, okay.
Yeah, you know, it's like a typical Japanese conglomerate. It's, you know, everything, every, all of, who knows, they may make cars for all we know. But this one is very high rye content. They call it a high rye whiskey. It's 35% rye, and that's where you're getting this sort of pepper.
It's the sharpest.
It is, absolutely.
I think it might be one of,
I put it at the end because I thought it would cut through things some more, and it might be my favorite of the set.
But this is the last one?
Well, that's, we're going to come back to some.
Oh, so I can have more chips?
No, you can't have any more chips.
Oh, sorry.
This is interesting because Four Roses, other than one particular type of Four Roses, for a long time was not even in America. Like, so they were so focused on the Japanese market, they only sent their good stuff to Japan. It never even stayed here. And so I forget how many years ago. But anyway, it is here. Let's see if there's any other bourbon stories I forgot to tell.
I'm not a bourbon drinker.
Yeah.
I probably couldn't drink that. That's the toughest one for me so far.
Yeah, like, I think the ryes are going to be more challenging.
Yeah, it was. I think it was one, the one before this, or the one, the Knob Creek one. Yeah, I could drink that as someone with a completely unsophisticated palate. Yeah. This, that's a bit sharp. I could use it to strip some paint off a door. I'm not sure I could drink it.
I think it's
tough for someone like me who doesn't drink this.
I think it smells more interesting than the other ones too. A little bit more of the vanilla smells.
Yeah, it's definitely, it smells less alcoholy.
Yeah.
But yet, and I mean that in a very broad sense of how something smells, I'm like, oh, here we go. And yet, you know, when I imbibed, definitely the sharpest.
Okay. So we have, well, we have
is
one.
Is it expensive? Because I'm actually
going to.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
I also poured more than I intended into both of our glasses. That's something well, to do we're with an hour, the number we've had.
We're an hour in and production values do tend to drift about.
So let's jump right to our next music. I assume you're going with Future Islands.
Future Islands is the only one left.
Well, we're going to talk about some other bands too.
Yeah, and I think, did you want to play Future Islands? I'm going to find Future Islands and just put it on. I was already familiar with this album. And I hate.
So Future Islands is actually semi-local in that they're based out of Baltimore now. They met at East Carolina University. They would be called, their style is, I was calling it retro alternative, but they're calling it synthesizer pop. And I kind of thought this would be something to interest you. It's got a little mid to late 80s.
That's exactly what I wrote down. Yeah. And while this plays,
and of course, I mean,
can I just throw you a quick fun toy about the Baseball Project?
Okay.
That thing was over an hour long. That was an old fashioned double album.
Yeah,
you don't know it when you download
it because it's a vanity project for these old guys.
But there you go. But
yeah. So the reason that these guys got, well, one of the reasons he's got very popular is because this song, their live performance on David Letterman. The guy's like the shortest. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Okay, so he's very short, squat, and he does a particular kind of dance. And it was a huge hit on YouTube, you know, because of just the way he was dancing and getting into it. And Dave Letterman, like, raved about them.
This was the song he played.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. It's got an interesting video that's, like, all Western-based or something like that, but doesn't really. It's not a very techno-pop type of video.
I wrote down two, because it was interesting, because they are very much a pastiche. Let me use that word of an era of music that is close to my heart. I wrote down two bands. I started thinking of all these 80s bands and who are they most like, and they weren't most like anyone to their credit.
No, yeah, they're not.
But what they were, to me, they were a collision of, I'm going to throw you one name brand that everyone will know, Spandau Ballet.
I think it's
with a collision of Spandau Ballet and a band called Talk Talk,
who I like a lot.
Yeah,
I like the density here. To be honest, I haven't listened to a lot of Spandau Ballet, but I tend to think of it as a thinner, thinner sound to it.
That's why I said a collision, like, of a couple of those.
I really do. This
he
is
wasn't
another.
Quite as strong as what's his face from ABC. Remember the band ABC?
Mm-hmm.
Shoot that poison arrow. That lead singer could really bang that out.
Yeah, but he's got more gravel. In fact, I think he's got, like, there's one song in this album that's almost like a metal song, and apparently he has a background as a metal singer. But he found that he could do this sort of very rich, deep, I guess it's a baritone, isn't it?
It's interesting, though, that you recommend this album to me. I understand why you did it, and I also understand why you just threw the baseball project at me as almost let me poke him and see what happens.
Yeah, well, as long as I had that job.
But I think you threw this one at me thinking, oh, well, he'll definitely like this one. Here's the interesting thing. I
won't say definitely. I got another one that I'm going to bring up here
I didn't like it that much because at the end of the day, and that's why I use the word, and I don't mean it as an insult, it's a pastiche of a lot of things
This is a perfect example of a band. Throw on Sun in the Morning because it's another song that's worth listening to.
I also felt that many of the songs were kind of the same.
The thing about this band and a number of other bands is a band I really like a lot. I've mentioned before Haim, which is the three sisters, and they do this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so informed by the 80s that I can't decide if it's a tribute band almost. Well, like there's a band locally that called the Leg Warmers that does this 80s party like twice a month at the local club, or not twice a month, but it's huge. Everybody packs in there, dresses up and stuff like that. Is that what this is?
Well, that's why I call it pastiche. Because it's
like, here's what I need to figure out about a band like this.
It's homage. Maybe that's the word.
Are 18-year-olds and college people listening to this?
I think the answer is yes.
I think so. And if that's the case, then okay.
Because they don't know. Because they don't know.
Think about it. Listen, we listen to bands that were informed by the past. We just didn't know the past. Like for us, this rings of certain things, but it doesn't matter. If people like it today, they like it.
They're no Mr. Mister, that's for sure.
Think about that. Like, here's something I'll say about music. Like, there are so many bands from the 80s that I hated in the 80s because I would listen to harder stuff. I didn't only listen to harder stuff, but I didn't listen to Yaz, for example. But now, I heard enough of it in the background from other people that now when it's on, I listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure it's psychological. I'm sure it's less about the music quality and more about, like, what it makes me think of.
Now, I need to turn it down a little bit. I stuck to my original rule that I didn't listen to anything else by any of these bands. I just listened to the album you sent me. So the question I have for you is there other stuff like this as well? Because if it is, then it's slightly different.
Oh, is there other stuff? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. To be honest, I didn't. Well, Joy Formidable is consistent. I had listened to their prior album, and these guys, I have no idea.
Because if that's the case. And it was interesting. This album's
right, that would be more legitimate, right? Like if they just did an album that was like,
I don't know. I can't decide. If they did just this album as sort of I keep using this word, as an homage, as a tribute to 80s sounds that inspired them, you can get away with that. In the same way that, you know, one. I'm sorry.
No, I'm going to steal the plug from you because the next couple of things we listen to, I can control better than you because you have one song on the other thing, but I have
all. But if their whole career is like that, then, yeah, we are drifting into, you know, 80s cover band territory. It's interesting. Anyway, the point I was making was this album is called Singles, and each one of them is quite a strong track on its own, and I felt that all of them sounded the same, and that was what I didn't like about
them.
I know, and I'm not being entirely
fair.
But it's
the same story I was telling before about a hook. You know, they have a particular style on their
Like the Joy Formidable, yeah. But again, it's one of those things, in contrast to the Joy Formidable, they're doing their thing. These guys are almost doing, on this album, they were doing someone else's thing.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, what do I need to listen to their version when I can go and listen? And again, that's because of who I am in my stage of life. But I do get your point. If I'm a college student, I wasn't brought up on these 80s bands. So this is new to me.
I will say, to my mind, they are talent. You can hear enough talent in the way they play that I have reasonable hopes of them. They're also a little older. They're not like some kids like, oh, look, we made this in our basement and we may end up being stockbrokers.
Yeah.
I think they're really into this thing.
I'm not criticizing them as artists in any way. I'm just...
So I don't have a tremendous amount to say about the last, because we've kind of covered most of my bigger topics. This is Blanton's, which has a very cute bottle. You like this?
It's got a little horse on top of the cap.
Blanton's is back in the Buffalo Trace family, but it's a different recipe than the Buffalo Trace and Eagle Rare we had. This has more rye. It's a single barrel also, which means, like usually, you take the barrels and you blend them together to get a certain taste, and this one is from a particular barrel. Has a little horse top on thing.
Now, that's interesting. The one we just had, what was the one before this?
Four Roses.
I felt that was the most sort of extreme to me, where I'm like, I'm not a bourbon drinker, so I probably can go near this. I feel this one, you've come back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it has.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I
so the still the four not my roses favorite. Is a 35% rye. This has rye, but just some rye. You know, it's not heavy onto this sort of stuff, so. But I don't really have a lot more to tell stories about the bourbons. Should we talk about our next New Year's resolution? We're running this pretty long. We may have to – maybe
No, it's an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
No, we're fine. We've got five or six more minutes.
We have to talk about our 2015 – well, but I do, we have more music too.
We got one more. We got one. Okay.
We got two more. I'm going to make you listen to some other music too. So.
What, right now?
Well, in addition to the band that you know that we're going to play.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, let's do it.
Okay, all right. So
otherwise, it will run long.
Yeah, it will definitely run. So this is I thought I recommended this to you, but maybe I didn't because it technically came out. It technically came out at the end of 2013, and so I might have opted out of that. But you knew enough about it.
I had already downloaded this song. I liked it a lot. Recommended to me.
So this is Saint Vincent, which is really. Just this one woman, Annie Clark. She's been on Saturday Live. Now, there's probably a lot of people, and this is the biggest song they've had. And I think this is somebody who I think we're going to hear from. Like this is not something like, oh, look, it kind of surfaced. Somebody paid attention. I think this person has enough talent that we're going to see different albums in the future. We're going to see different types of things maybe she's doing. I think.
She has an Alanis Morissette touch to her voice, just vocally.
Yeah, I think
when she hits some of the notes, I can see, but without all the angst.
It's sort of I think of it like almost like art pop. It's got a little bit of David. Yeah. And she did some work with David Byrne of the Talking Heads. And to my mind, this sounds a lot like Talking Heads.
The technical phrase is indie pop. So it's not it's alternative pop.
No, I'm saying art, like it's like an art school thing, like, you know, Garbage, the band.
Yeah, no,
Garbage.
But what I mean is, don't call them pop music. They're something. Oh, pop. That's pop. What I know. It's
oh yeah,
pop,
yeah, no, it's not
but,
just pop.
But you call yourself something pop to differentiate yourself from Taylor Swift.
So I mean, I initially. She has a certain appearance, although actually changes so often. It just so happened that the first appearance I saw her in is like she looks on the cover of the album. But she's changed her appearance like three times since, which is totally art pop.
That's that Lady Gaga.
But so I had a predisposed disliking for her because I thought this is very posy, you know. But the more and more I've listened to her and the more I've seen of her, the more interesting. She stood in for Fred Armisen, you know, from Saturday Live, does the music for the Seth Meyers show. Yeah. Well, she stood in for him for like a week, like running the band and stuff like that. There's just a lot of interesting things about her that I think she's going to turn out pretty good. I wanted to play one other song by her, which we can talk over.
So you have the whole album.
So this, I think this shows you that there are different songs. Like, this does not sound like the last song. I mean, other than the fact it's art poppy, but it's not. It doesn't have a repetitism.
It doesn't have a hook. It doesn't have a poppy hook.
No, but this has the part which, whoa, that's kind of hooky.
This could easily
takes a while to get there. Though,
this could so easily find its way into a Lana Del Rey album. So there you go. And I like Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. So there you go. So this is a good opportunity to talk about 2015 resolutions.
Let's do it.
So I have one.
Okay.
Brew beer.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got I actually brewed beer years ago, like back in, while I was in law school, I think, so like 93 or so I brewed beer.
Okay.
And so I have not done it for a number of years, in part because it was too much. Like normally you would brew these 5-gallon batches and it was just, I don't need that much beer, you know, and I don't need to make that much of a mess in my house. Well, now you can get kits where it's just basically a gallon. I mean, a gallon only makes about 5 beers, right? 64 ounces is not 6 full beers. So I'm looking forward to trying that out in smaller, more controllable amounts and just enough that it doesn't cut into my just having store. See, I kind of like this part. The guitar part in the back's kind of faded out. So I'm going to be making beer this year.
All right. I'm excited.
I think in terms of a resolution, I initially was thinking once a month. I'm not sure I'm going to get to once a month. So something between 6 and 12 batches of beer. That's my aim.
Okay. I'm up for that.
So,
and we'll every couple of episodes, we'll have a beer and
check in on all
we'll check in on it and drink on the air. I do not have a resolution. I never do. I tell you, every year, even the music one.
I mean, we talked about this for like weeks, not weeks, but like we email. I'm like, how hard is it to come up with a resolution? So listen, I'm going to give you some parameters, and you're going
to I brought in that because it's easy for me to go, yo, I'm going to eat more donuts, or I'm going to see every big major franchise movie that comes out. They're all kind of fun resolutions. That's just something you're going to do. I'm not the sort of person who's going to set himself goals that are difficult, because then I'm failing.
Well,
that's the bottom line.
I don't know if this is going to solve the problem for you, but as people know who have listened before, I don't make resolutions like I'd like to not eat chocolate anymore or lose weight. I mean, those are all good goals, but
useless.
But I want to have a resolution that is enjoyable,
yeah,
that will take some effort on my part, but there is clear,
okay,
hey, this is fun to do. So we had to eat more fajitas. We had to drink more bourbons.
Effort.
Exactly.
Fun. So I'm writing down these as like buzzwords.
Exactly. So I'm going to suggest there's a couple of categories there for you.
Okay.
Think about hobbies, which I know you hate that word. So we'll say crafts or whatever you want to say. You know, we had the debate about hobbies versus crafts. Or
is it your hobby?
Art related things, not meaning that you have to do art, but it can be appreciate art.
Okay. And it also has to translate to a podcast.
Though this is all perfect. All the things.
Okay. And, all right.
Again, it has to be something affirmative. I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah. I'm not doing anything negative.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Not deny myself this. I'm not going to, limit this aspect to myself. I'm not going to make things more difficult, but rather.
There's a few people out there wishing I'd deny myself a go at the microphone.
Think of things you like in the way of food, art, photography, music, whatever the heck it is.
All right.
And it's whether you do it or you will expose yourself to more of it.
Okay.
In the coming year. And then you can, turn a multiplicity out of it.
Like, I will have
whatever the kind of thing is, maybe you want to go to 4 museums over the course of the year.
I will have it.
I mean, we have tons of museums here.
I will have it by the next show, I promise. Now you've set some constructive parameters for me.
Okay. I had one more thing because, I don't know if you.
Yeah, because I've got a whole open bag of chips that I've been denied eating.
Do you work in a place where your healthcare plan allows you to like deduct stuff into the new year, or if you have an IRA, like an investment account?
Okay.
You can a lot of times through March of 2015, make contributions to 2014.
I've drank all kinds of bourbon that I don't drink. These are very technical questions to be hitting me with after an hour and 10 minutes.
So what I'm going to say is, I was supposed to recommend music for you in 2014.
Okay.
I'm going to say that there's a carryover period that I can actually recommend more music to you for a longer period.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
And so the next album I'm going to push is Real Estate. The band is Real Estate.
I mean, it's not costing you anything.
No, exactly. The band's called Real Estate.
All right.
The album is Atlas. I'm going to play a couple songs here while we
spend the rest of our time. I will do it.
Now I have to figure out which songs I was going to play.
Oh, so I've now got the kill time.
Right. No, that's all right.
All right.
So this, I think, is another one where I think you'd like it. This song's called Past Lives. And this is another one that reminds me of something, but I'm not quite sure what. More of a, again, it is definitely taking me back to somewhere in maybe the early 90s instead.
I was just about to say, late 80s, early 90s, I'm thinking of the guy from the Talking Heads, Jerry Harrison.
Oh.
Who experimented with some stuff sort of in this vein.
So these guys are out of New Jersey. Doesn't sound like it should be out of New Jersey, but it is out of New Jersey. Now that I think about it, there's another bourbon still.
Okay,
one more bourbon. We might as well figure out the full set.
All right.
It's that 46 one I was going to knock out.
Okay, let's do it. So I really need to get to my cheddar and sour cream flavored ruffles.
We'll be done in 5 minutes.
Oh, my.
I'm telling the people listening to the podcast that as well. We're almost finished. Stick with us, folks.
If your resolution was to just bend the Atlantic voice, we've given you every reason to do that.
So what is this? Like, it makes me think it's not Happy Mondays, but it's...
No, but it's got that sort
Jesus
of...
Jones, maybe? Or
no, but you're all sort of naming bands from that era. This could easily have been played on the radio in any time from 1989 to 1993.
The way they produce the vocals is what's making me think of this. This airy sort of...
It's definitely got sort of a...
Almost Oasis-ish.
No, actually, I was going to say the band who used to be in direct competition with them. Listen, I was a big Blur fan.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
There's some moments in Blur albums that are just like this, and we're looking at 1992, 93, 94. I mean, again, I'm getting to the age where all these different, shoegaze, it's indie pop, it's pop rock, it's alt down. I'm like, do I like it, do I not?
One more song called Had to Hear.
Oh, yeah. They were listening to alternative radio from the years 1989 to 1994.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the other ones were slightly earlier. This is definitely, like, because I equate it with, like, around the time of mid-college and later.
Yeah. But there's an Oasis. This could easily end up on an Oasis album somewhere.
It doesn't have as much to angst. And they're probably not Manchester City fans.
It's a little area, yeah. The lemon drops.
Oh, yeah.
Those sort of bands.
Then there's a distinct possibility you listen to the album and you'll be like, it's all the same, but I like
it. No, I'll give it a go.
So I think that's it. Is there anything else to talk about?
No, I think it's time to eat some chips and have a nap.
You're not going
to
watch the Virginia Notre Dame basketball game.
Happy New Year. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I was Zeph.
And I was Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.